Hello and welcome to part three of the Three Bid League podcast, A10 preseason preview. If you missed our prior episodes, in episode one, we went over the preseason favorite, the Richmond Spiders, along with George Mason and George Washington. And then in episode two, we talked about the St. Louis Billikens, the UMass Minutemen, and the LaSalle Explorers. Well, today we move into part three, where we will cover the Davidson Wildcats, the St. Bonaventure Bonnies, and the Fordham Rams. But before that before we get into that, Matt, we got some news this week that St. Joe's may be considered among the elite programs in college basketball.
Yeah, Tyler, some huge respect for the Hawks. They get invited into the Fort Myers tip-off, where they're going to play against Auburn and Kansas. Two coaches at those programs that just run a really clean basketball program. There's nothing going on there that we need to worry about. So it's going to be a level playing field when the Hawks take on those powerhouse teams. And yeah, I don't know what year the hosts of this event think it is, because the last time I checked, it's going to be kind of a rough season for the Hawks, but we'll get into that next week. I don't want to get ahead of ourselves.
And we should note that the other team in this tournament that St. Joe's is not playing is Gonzaga. So we're looking at three top 15, hell, maybe even top 10 teams nationally. I know St. Louis fans had their hopes up that maybe they would get into that tournament, but you know, there's a lot of bizarre things in the universe of scheduling right now, and this might take the cake in college basketball's I'm not going to call it Rothstein's term, the silver frame. Let's go with that.
Yeah, when you retweeted this morning on our account, I saw the tweet, just read the word Saint and just kind of assumed it was St. Louis, and I actually closed out, like I just didn't finish reading it. And then later on, like I was scrolling through again and I saw the same tweet, I'm like, wait a minute, that was surprising. But you know what, one thing I will say about St. Joe's, even last year when they were terrible, the Hawks always play a tough schedule, and part of that has to do with getting in the Big Five Philly games. That helps out. But good for them. And you know what? They should be better. I was a little bit too hard on them earlier. But, you know, those will be some fun games, and maybe they can pull the big upset.
Yeah, it'll be tough. Probably the most brutal back-to-back days that, honestly, maybe even any team in college basketball will face. But we know the Hawks can score with anyone. They'll definitely struggle to get stops those days, but maybe one of those days a 94-92 score happens to go their way.
Yeah, they're gonna be chucking a lot of threes to try to keep up those games, that's for sure. And you know Auburn likes to do that. I don't know if Kansas will, but those could be some fun games for sure.
Yep, so we now move on into part three of our conference preview. For those of you who did not listen to the first two parts, first of all, we would highly recommend it. I mean, we might be just a tinge biased, but we think they're worth the listen, even if it's not your specific team. Good to get yourself educated about who your favorite squad will be playing this year. But one thing that we put in this year, 15-minute time limit for each team. We start the timer. You'll hear it go off. We have hit the timer on all six teams so far, and I expect that we will again on these three. So, without further ado, we head on to the St. Bonaventure Bonnies. Finished fifth last year, just narrowly missing out on a double bye after losing to SLU on the final game of the year. And they basically return everybody from last year's team, their whole starting lineup. Kyle Lofton, Dominic Welsh, Asuna Shunahi, Jaron English, who now goes by Jaron Holmes, and Justin Winston, along with a few interesting bench players led by Alejandro Vasquez. Really the only major loss, backup center Amadi Ikpeazi, who played some important minutes when Ashunahi was hurt, he graduated. And Boca Bobby Planudas transferred.
What about Boca Bobby Carpenter? Or maybe he didn't have the same kind of nickname. But you're right, those were the big losses for St. Bonaventure. The first thing that really jumps out to me looking at this team, nine juniors, which I can't remember the last time I've seen a single team with that many players of the same class, except for maybe like you know, once in a while you'll see one of the main one and done programs with a whole bunch of freshmen, but it's interesting. It almost reminds me just a little bit of Richmond last year, just their roster makeup, not necessarily what I think of the team, but no seniors, but it's still a relatively experienced team. And they kind of have had the same core guys around now. This is going to be the third year, most likely, of Kyle Lofton, Dom Welch, and Oshun Oshunigi in the starting lineup together.
Yeah, and part of that junior class is a whole bunch of very interesting transfers. I know some of the Bonnies fans are high on Eddie Creel, who comes out of junior college. They get a pair of ex-MAC players. Jalen Attaway comes over from Miami of Ohio. Anthony Roberts comes in from Kent State. And at the end of the season, it really felt like one of the big concerns for Bonaventure was that they may not get a big infusion to their roster. And it's looking like that could be wrong. They got a great starting five right now, and these guys could be the pieces that help them to really bump up their bench this year.
I'd be interested to see what happens, since they do return all five starters from last year. Really guys that started most of the season for them. But I do think with some of these transfers, they do have some guys that could potentially break into the starting lineup. And I think one key this year, we always see Mark Schmidt and St. Bonaventure play a very thin rotation, but if the Bonnies want to, it looks like they could go pretty deep.
Yeah, they definitely can. I really like what A.J. Vasquez showed us last year, especially in that Rutgers game up in Toronto. He was super inconsistent, but he's certainly a guy who's going to be worthy of good minutes on a given night. Anthony Roberts, super, super intriguing. We're used to trying to evaluate transfers who come down from high major programs, guys who were maybe trying to get a reset. Anthony Roberts spent 2 years at Kent State, started 21 games, averaged 13 points a game. So this is a guy that we've seen be able to produce not quite in a Power 8 conference, but what's the MAC? Maybe like the 11th best conference in college basketball?
I'd say so.
This is a guy who's had a lot of success elsewhere. And, you know, I can't see Schmidt breaking up the starting lineup given how well they all played together when everyone was healthy at the end of the year. But Anthony Roberts is an early contender, if not a potential favorite for sixth man of the year.
I'd say right now, just at first glance, I think Anthony Roberts might be the most intriguing of St. Bonaventure's newcomers. And that's kind of a recent update to the roster, too, because he just received a waiver to play within the last couple weeks since he transferred this offseason. But like you said, he played for a pretty decent Kent State program. They've been one of the better teams in the MAC. And he averaged almost 13 points a game last year, so I don't know. I mean, he only averaged about 3 rebounds, so I don't know how much he's going to do on the defensive end. But from a scoring standpoint, I think he could provide a spark to this offense.
Yeah, and I'm not sure they really need a ton of defense from their bench. When you've got a perimeter of Lofton, Holmes, and Welch out there, and with Justin Winston at the four, like, this team's got plenty of defense. That should not be an issue. Their bench just really lacked in scoring last year when Vasquez was not playing well.
I'm interested you say that, actually. And I think I kind of want to get into one of my first questions about this team, because I really see defense, honestly, as one of the weaker points. And I guess we should start off by saying Oshun Oshunigi, who we're going to talk about a whole bunch this season because he's so exciting to watch, he's one of the most important players in this conference because of what he can do inside the paint on the defensive end. He's probably the best rim protector in the A-10, which is high praise because there are a lot of good ones. But what we saw last year is when he got injured both at the beginning and for a few games in the middle of the season, St. Bonaventure's team defense really struggled, and they had some of their worst games of the year when he wasn't in the lineup. So I really think we need to see a little bit more of a defensive boost from some of these role players and some of the guards and wings. I really felt like at the end of the season, I think St. Bonaventure missed Courtney Stocker and Ladarian Griffin a lot on the defensive end because those guys were great. And outside of Oshun, I felt like St. Bonaventure had some solid defensive players, but no one that you could count on to be a stopper on a consistent basis.
Yeah, and that's probably their biggest issue. They don't have an elite defender beyond Ashunahi. This is not St. Louis or Duquesne or Dayton where the roster is just lined top to bottom and fantastic defenders, but they have a lot of guys that I would rate as being above average. And certainly as a team defense, I feel at least somewhat confident in their ability. I'm not expecting them to be one of the two or three best teams in this conference on that end, but I certainly expect them to be in the top half.
I was surprised. I knew they weren't great last year, but if you go by KenPom's defensive efficiency, they were 12th in the A-10 in that metric, just in conference games. And I do think part of that gets a little bit skewed when you realize that the three games Oshun was out, they gave up 91, 86, and 81 points. So they really did get lit up those games. But
and they were terrible in those games.
And to be fair, too, that's actually another thing I kind of wanted to dive into. So I think that's, you know, everyone knows how important Oshun is to this team. You can watch St. Bonaventure, and it's easy to tell because their whole defense goes through him, and he changes the way other teams have to play against the Bonnies. I guess one thing I'm a little hesitant about, I think people are assuming that St. Bonaventure will just be better if Oshun is in the lineup and that they would have won more games if he was healthy throughout the entire season. And I definitely agree at the beginning of the year when they lost a couple bye games, they needed him badly. I just see, though, two of those losses in conference, they lost by 28 at VCU and 26 at Dayton. You could have given them Andrew Nicholson, and I don't think they would have won those games. They were just outclassed. Now, the other one was a close home loss against Rhode Island where Fats just went off at the end. But even then, like, maybe they could have won that one with Oshun, but I'm not sure how big of an impact his injury had on their wins and losses last season.
It's weird. That VCU game the really stuck out to me as being the night where Bones Highland could have jumped on a plane to Massachusetts at halftime and still start and made some shots from there into the Seagull Center basket. Mm-hmm. He was just absolutely unconscious. But their defense was bad, and I'm not even looking particularly at those games, which, you know what, I guess I should go into one of my big critical questions, which is what happens when Ashunahi's not on the court, especially now that Amadi Akpeezy, who was very good at various moments when Ashunahi was hurt or in foul trouble, like, what happens to their defense when he's not on the court? There were so many games last year where he got in foul trouble, and that's when their defense started to crumble because they just simply didn't have the same level of rim protection. And, you know, I look at this roster now, their only other potential center is a junior college transfer by the name of Jalen Shaw, and they're going to have to ask him to step in and immediately be a force on the defensive end when Ashunahi's not out there.
I think that's got to be the hope for St. Bonaventure, just that Shaw can kind of replace Ikpeezy's role as a backup center to give Oshun a break when he's tired or in foul trouble. But yeah, he is pretty unproven at this point, and I really don't think he's much of an offensive threat since he only averaged 11 points a game in junior college, so he's probably going to give most of his value on defense. But you're right, because I don't really see too many other guys on this roster where you could throw them out as a stretch five. I think Justin Winston's probably too small. I mean, even though he's 6'8", I think of him more as a wing than a big. And so, yeah, that would be kind of difficult if Oshun was unavailable for certain stretches of a game. I don't see them having a ton of success with a smaller lineup. It didn't work last year, that's for sure.
I'm actually very interested by that possibility. Justin Winston is someone who I think has a chance to really take a huge step up on the defensive end this year. He was not consistent last year, and I think a big part of that is he only played 20 minutes a game, had some big foul problems, but he was really impressive at various points throughout the year. He was one of those guys who may not profile as a good defender, but had so many great flashes in various games.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think Winston, I mean, he came in getting inconsistent playing time, and slowly he was integrated into the lineup more consistently. And he did have those flashes, which you would expect because he was one of the more highly rated recruits coming into last season for the conference. I'd just like to see his game get a little more well-rounded. I felt like he didn't really take advantage of his size and athleticism enough. We didn't really see him finishing at the rim super often. He took a lot of three-pointers, but I don't know. I just felt like we didn't see him using his skills to his advantage on a consistent basis. I feel like there's definitely room for him to grow, both as an inside scorer and defender.
Yeah, only 3.5 rebounds a game last year. That number's definitely going to have to go up too.
Mm-hmm. I would agree.
So do you have another question still?
I kind of wanted to talk about Winston a little bit more, so that sort of hit it. I guess, you know, one other issue, we haven't really talked about Kyle Lofton yet. I want to see if he can get a little bit more efficient, because he put up great assist numbers. He actually led the conference in that last year. You know, you can count on him to play about 39 minutes a game. He's always out on the court. And he did improve his three-point shooting. He went up to 41% once they got the conference play, which is way higher than his career average. So maybe he's turning a corner there. I'd just like to see him improve his shot selection a little bit, because if you dive into the numbers, he really got burned by poor mid-range shooting. I think he's pretty good at finishing at the rim, but if he could just eliminate some of those missed shots, I think we could really – I don't even want to call it a breakout season, because he was already on the all-conference first team. But, I mean, Lofton's been so important to this team the last 2 years, and I feel like he might even have a little bit more room to go up this year.
He's so unselfish to the point that it actually might be a detriment to him, where he's just constantly trying to move the ball and get other guys open. And, you know, late in the game when he feels like he has to – begin to change his mentality, he definitely starts to force shots. I'd love to see him kind of get more into the flow of play, be willing to take tough shots in the middle of the first half and basically set himself up to kind of improve his shot selection as the game goes on. Because I definitely agree on that being an issue. And really, to me, shot selection and aggressiveness is really the only thing standing between him just being a good, like, maybe second team all-conference player this year and being a prime player of the year contender.
Right. And it would be interesting to see too, you know, just looking at St. Bonaventure's stats from last year, the main four returning juniors, Lofton, Holmes, Welch, and Oshun, they all averaged between 10 and 14 points a game. So, you know, no one, maybe it's not an issue, but they didn't have that go-to, like, 18-a-game, 20-a-game scorer. If anyone could do it, I would think it would be Lofton, but maybe they don't really need to go that direction with so many scorers on the court.
So I'm glad you mentioned those guys, and we get to my second question here, which is, what should our expectations be for Jaron Holmes and Dominic Welch? I've seen Welch as a guy who – could be a sleeper all-conference player. Some people have thrown that out on Twitter. Either you or Stu Ledecky had him in your top 20 players for the conference
this
year.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's a fantastic player, but I don't really see him, like, taking a jump into, like, true stardom. To me, he reminds me of really kind of a cross between Ryan Mixel and Trey Landers, where he's actually smaller than both of those guys, but he rebounds at an almost Landersian rate, but mm-hmm. he can stretch the floor in the same way Mixel did. And I don't see him as the kind of guy who's going to really chuck up enough shots to be like a true third option on offense, but he's just so good at everything. And I think he can be the critical Swiss Army knife to this team. So I'm kind of wondering, like, am I looking at this wrong, or maybe are other people looking at this wrong?
I'm really optimistic for Dom Welch this year. The two things, and you did touch on them, at the end of last season, he started rebounding a ton for this team. And he also just took it to the hole a lot more. As a freshman, he was mostly just a three-point shooter on offense, but I think he's gotten a lot more versatile over time, and I've just enjoyed watching him play. He passes the eye test for me. Holmes is interesting. I wonder, I mean, I think he's a good player. I wonder if he's going to give up any playing time to some of these transfers, because St. Bonaventure does have some guards coming in, as we've mentioned. But, you know, I think he's another guy too. I don't think of him as a huge offensive threat, but when I look at guys that could maybe boost the team's defense, he's someone I have in mind. I just think of him as one of their clue guys.
So for me, given that I don't see Welch really going much higher than his current 12 point a game average, I wonder if it's fair to believe that Jaron Holmes could be what he flashed for about a half dozen games at the end of last season, which is the secondary playmaker alongside Lofton and really the second reliable scorer from the perimeter.
All right. Did you set the timer for this one? Because I'm at like 17 minutes almost.
Yeah, it went off, but it was really
okay.
Low. So
I didn't hear it. That's okay.
Yeah.
Final thoughts. I mean,
so final thing here, because this is how I want to wrap it up anyway. We do have a fan question, so maybe we should have given it an extra minute anyway. From Little Bonna X, the friend in the SBU Unfurled and Friends podcast. He asks, who will develop into the number three option after Lofton and Ashun? He thinks that Welch is probably the favorite, but he had some rough stretches last year. And he thinks there's a lot of guys who could potentially be options. I would personally say I think it's Jaron Holmes. I believe he's headed for a huge breakout season, but, you know, Anthony Roberts could also very well be that guy.
Yeah, I'd say Welch or Roberts. I like Holmes a lot. I just don't see him as one of the main offensive threats, but I mean, they're all good players. They're all going to be fighting each other for minutes. And, you know, I am interested to see, I already brought it up, but is this the year Mark Schmidt runs a deep lineup? Probably not, but he can if he feels like it now.
Yep. So with that, we will move on to the Davidson Wildcats. By the way, for anyone curious, the timer starts after I finish the quick preview. So it's basically a free little minute here, but Davidson brings back part of their roster. Kellen Grady returns, Luka Brajkovic, Hyungjun Lee, Bates Jones, Nelson Bochy-Yeedom. They do lose John Axel Goodmanson after what was really a fantastic close to his senior season. And, you know, that's going to be a big loss for the Wildcats, and how they react to that change could really dictate where they go from here.
I think Davidson is one of these interesting teams, and I remember bringing this up when we had Petey Buckets on for our season recap episode. The analytics love them. They were 70th in the country in KenPom, but you could ask pretty much any A-10 fans. I mean, you could ask Davidson fans. They would not consider them the 70th best team or anywhere close to that. And, you know, part of that might just be they lost some close games early in the year that kind of brought down their wins and losses. And then I always like to say Bob McKillop runs up the score against bad teams. But outside of losing John Axel, they bring back pretty much everyone else. They did lose Luke Frampton as a transfer, although I don't think many people expected him to be back anyway. And I think this is finally going to be Kelvin Grady's year as the lone superstar, because really they don't bring back any other guys that did a ton for this team. I mean, anyone that I would consider much more than a role player. So it's going to be interesting. It's going to be a different look not having John Axel out there.
So we might as well just start the questions right now, because for me, the question is really a simple one. How good can you be if Kellen Grady's your best player? He's a fantastic player. We obviously saw them go to an NCAA tournament when he was the third option. We saw them go to an NIT when he was John Axel's sidekick. But last year when John Axel was hurt early in the year, Grady was getting his numbers, but Davidson was not getting wins. And there's a lot of evidence mounting that when he takes more than 12 shots in a game, Davidson's under 500 in his career. When he takes over 15 shots in a game, they're under 500 for his career. And, you know, he's going to have to become more of a playmaker this year with John Axel gone. I definitely think he has the ability to, but to me, that is the question mark for them.
It is for sure. This is going to be the first time in his career where he's definitely going to have the highest usage on the team. He doesn't really have another one of those go-to guys alongside with him. I'm interested to see how his role develops too, because, you know, John Axel got 95% of the minutes at point guard for Davidson the last two seasons. Really, the only returning option I see is Grady. I don't think Carter Collins is much of a point guard, although he's a solid, you know, off-ball guard. He can score, but I don't see him as much of a distributor. Other than that, Davidson has two freshman guards coming in, Grant Huffman and Emery Lanier. Maybe they could be an option, but I feel like we could see Grady running the point a lot more this year.
I think he really has to be for them to hit their ceiling.
Which I think he can, even though he hasn't done that a ton in his career. I think by now as a senior, he's comfortable enough in this offense. I think he handles the ball well. It'll be interesting to see. He has increased his assist rate the last few years. Last year was a career high for him. So it's going to look different without John Axel, who was excellent both at scoring and creating for his teammates. That might be a little bit of an adjustment for Davidson, but I don't think it would necessarily be a bad thing. I just think in a conference like the A-10 where, you know, it's good players, but it's not like a bunch of NBA guys or anything. I feel like if you just put one of the most talented players in the conference in such an important role, which, you know, I think Grady is one of those guys, not everyone does, I think he can still succeed. I guess the question is how much better will he make his teammates around him?
I've always believed that he possesses the playmaking ability, but even last year, career high 2.5 assists a game. Like, this is a guy that people have compared to Steph Curry. It's a lazy comparison, but I mean, I've personally compared him to Jack Gibbs. And, you know, Bob McKillop has had this history over the last 15 years of finding great shooters and great slashers, two skills that Kellen Grady is fantastic at, and turning them into good point guards. And so I think that this is as much McKillop being able to continue that trend as it is Grady being able to kind of extend his skill set. And I, you know, when, as I try to figure out my preseason poll, like this is what I'm making my bet on, is can this happen? Or I guess really the other part of it, can one of those freshman point guards really step up and be a fantastic leader of this offense?
See, one thing I will say, compared to, you know, two teams we talked about last week, St. Louis and UMass, I think those are teams that really rely on good point guard play to, you know, facilitate the offense, get their guys open looks. GW is another good example of that, I think, because they don't have a ton of guys that create for themselves. For Davidson, I'm not sure it's going to be quite as big of an issue just because their offense already relies on so much ball movement. So I think they're already going to have a lot of good passers on the court, even losing John Axel. Last year, they assisted on almost 60% of their field goals in conference play, which was the most in the A-10, even more than Dayton, which I was kind of surprised to see. So I think, you know, even without maybe a traditional point guard, I think there's enough skill on the court where they can still be one of the better offensive teams in the conference. Now, defense, which we haven't gotten to, that could always be a different question with the Wildcats.
Yeah, it was rough. And, you know, you keep leading me in. I guess I'll give my second question here, which is Davidson's defense got a lot better last year, and so did their rebounding when they put Nelson Bocciodum into the starting lineup that St. Bonaventure game. Fun quick little stat here. On the year, they were at minus 10 rebounding going into that game. If you take out the Dayton game where Dayton just didn't miss any shots and they only got 12 defensive rebounds, then they actually went plus 40 from then on out for the final month of the year. So my question is, was that a fluke, or could this Brajkovic, Bocciodum, Twin Towers front line solve what has been a huge issue for them these past few years, which is interior defense and defensive rebounding?
Yeah, you know, I love watching Nelson Bocciodum last year. I think he really improved this team, like you said. They immediately became a better defensive and rebounding team, which is something they needed. and they didn't have that early in the year when he wasn't getting playing time. The problem is, I feel like he's just, he represents everything Davidson doesn't want to be on offense, because he doesn't stretch the floor at all. He didn't attempt a three. He went 2 for 12 from the foul line. So, you know, even Luka, who's not known as a three-point shooter, he can still keep the defense honest. And I feel like Nelson just isn't, he's not that guy. But I almost feel like for Davidson, at least they're going to need to find a place for him on this team. I don't know if his offense is good enough for him to be a starter and to get a ton of minutes a game, but, you know, unless either Luka or Bates Jones or someone else improves their defense, they're going to have to keep him out there at least sometimes.
I think you got to go to that too big look at least a few minutes a game. It worked extremely well last year. And you know what? Unless something changes, it's pretty safe to assume that Luka Brajkovic is going to be in foul trouble a fair amount this year. That's been probably the biggest issue in his career so far. And Bochy Yeadom played very well in that backup center role. I agree with you completely. He's a fun guy to watch, and I think he's even more important to this team than most people realize. If they can get an above-average season from all three of their key big guys, him, Brajkovic, and Hyungjun Lee, then that really, really raises their ceiling.
Yeah, and I want to get to Hyungjun Lee more soon, because I have him as one of my breakout players, actually the breakout player in this conference, probably. We already, if you go back way earlier in the spring, I had him ludicrously high in our top 20 rankings. But I think we're forgetting about another key big man, and that's freshman Sam Menenga out of New Zealand, who I hesitate to call him the Trey Mitchell of this A-10 class, because he's probably not going to be that good. But I do think he is the highest recruit of the conference, or at least one of them this year. And I'm really interested to see what he can do. That's kind of one of my questions for this team. What can we expect from him for Davidson's inside game? Because he did practice with the team last spring. He's got a little bit of experience in that college environment. And I feel like just it's kind of hard to find a lot of information on him, just because, you know, I don't know how many New Zealand high school basketball highlights there even are. But from everything I've read, he's really skilled. He can shoot from outside. So that's what Davidson wants. They want skilled players. And since Luka only played 24 and a half minutes a game last year, I think having another good big man could really pay dividends. So I just wonder what he can do on this team. It's always a tough ask to rely on a freshman that much, especially when you don't know a ton about him. But Menenga is a guy that had some high major offers. So my hope for Davidson would be that he can contribute right away.
Look, I don't care what country you come from in terms of basketball strength. Anybody who is playing at like the U19 World Championships, that just helps a player so much to be able to be in that environment and to be able to play, maybe not necessarily against the best players in the world, but to be able to go up against teams from like the US, Canada, Spain, where you're going to be playing these young all-star squads that are basically just as good, if not better, than any team that you would see in college basketball. That's always a big positive for me. And you know what, Luka Brajkovic, he's got a lot of skill, but this is a guy who a year and a half ago, I saw a lot of shades of Peyton Aldridge, and it just kind of hasn't developed that way. And, you know, he's a reliable starter at the center position, but there's a lot of room to grow for this team.
See, you mentioned Peyton Aldridge, comparing him to Luka. That's honestly, and it's a huge stretch, and this is probably why I'm wrong on Davidson, why I think pretty highly of them. I almost see that in Hyungjun Lee a little bit, and that's sort of my second question. Can he step up and be Davidson's number two offense to replace John Axel a little bit? Because what I see in Lee, he's 6'7", so he's got some size, although he definitely needs to put some muscle on. But he's got that combination of having excellent shooting ability while also being able to get to the rim consistently. And that's kind of what Aldridge could do. He could score at all levels. And Lee was super efficient last year. He just only averaged 8.5 points a game because he was such a complimentary piece on that team. So I think if he can keep up his relatively high efficiency while taking more shots. And, you know, if he could average 14 or 15 points a game instead, which I think he has that ability just watching him. I thought he played great at times. I think Davidson could still be one of the best offensive teams in the conference. If he isn't ready to take on that role, I think it gets a little tougher because I don't see anyone else that can really be that big of a factor offensively. I mean, Davidson has plenty of good role players. It's just about finding the second star alongside Calvin Grady.
I'd be outright surprised if Hyunjun Lee doesn't take the jump to being what you would expect from a reliable third guy. Being a number two really just kind of depends on what the point guard situation looks like. Because Hyunjun Lee he didn't show me enough in terms of an ability to create his own shot to make me believe that he's a reliable number two at this point in his career. He's a fantastic catch and shoot guy. I'd love to have him as the number three on my team, but you know, being a number two, I think he can make enough shots to do that, but he's going to have to be put in good situations to be able to make those shots.
Right. And I think a lot of my optimism really comes from just watching him in a couple key big games. And, you know, I think his overall season stats don't quite jump off the page because he did disappear at times, especially the first 10 games or so. He really didn't do much. But in particular, when Davidson went on the road to Loyola Chicago, he was the star of that game with 19 points, and he was just knocking down everything in the second half. You know, same thing against VCU, the game they lost. He had 20, and he was really, for a good chunk of that game, he was the only guy on Davidson doing anything to keep them in it. So, I don't know. It's a tough ask of him, but I just saw a lot of offensive potential in him. And I really think he could be one of those guys that makes or breaks this team because, you know, if he just kind of does what he did last year, then Davidson's going to be Calvin Grady and a whole bunch of role players. And I just don't know if that's going to be enough. But if he is, you know, all conference level, at least offensively, I think it could still be a pretty good team. But it definitely is a bit of a stretch. And I'm probably more like optimistic on him than most people would or should be.
Yep, we are about to hit the buzzer here, but we got a question from Jacob Margolis, one of the best Davidson fan follows on Twitter. He wants to know, how will the offense change with John Axel Goodmanson no longer dominating it? Because before he got there, they played one of the more up-tempo styles in the country, but with him, they played at a glacial pace, which I don't know if that was supposed to be an Iceland joke or not, but I like it.
It's a good one.
So I'll let you start off on this.
I don't know. Yeah, that is interesting. Davidson was super methodical the last couple of years. I mean, I feel like there's still going to be a team. Like, they've got a lot of three-point shooters and good passers, so I feel like they can be patient and wait for the best shot. But I don't know. I don't know exactly how it's going to change. It definitely will. I'm just mostly, you know, going back to Grady, I want to see, like, is he going to carry this offense by himself or is he going to get more help? Because really, it was kind of like the two-headed monster the last couple seasons, and now it's not. I'd have to venture to guess they're still going to play a pretty similar style. Just, I mean, outside of John Axel, it's pretty much the same team coming back, but I'm interested to hear what you think on this.
I think it actually probably comes down more to the big men than the guards. If they're going to keep running their offense through the Grady Brejkovic combination for 25 to 30 minutes a game, then it probably will stay super slow. I mean, Luka Brejkovic is another guy who really loves to be methodical and kind of work his way into the post. Mm-hmm. If something happens and we end up seeing a lot more of Bochy Yeedom and Hyungjun Lee at the four, maybe a little bit of Menenga, then I think that's the kind of team that has more the ability to kind of play some hyper-speed spread pick and roll. So I think we could see a little bit of both, but I would certainly lean towards it being slower.
All right.
So I want to throw in one last comment here. You know, just the more we talk through it and the more I think about it, this team should be able to easily replace John Axel Goodmanson's scoring. They probably will be able to replace his rebounding. I think the biggest question comes down to, can they replace all that he gave them on the glass, and can they replace his assists?
Yeah, that is a good point. I mean, they are losing one of the best rebounding guards in the country in him, and that is going to be tough. I mean, at
seven
least
a game.
You know, they weren't a bad defensive rebounding team last year, but it's going to be tough to replace him. And I don't know. Gosh, we might need to see more Nelson. You're right on that. He might be more important than I thought.
I think they do. So, move on to our final team of the day.
Oof.
The Fordham Too High Rams.
A-10 champs.
A-10 champs. They won the final game of the A-10 season. They went 3-16 last year, including the A-10 tournament. But you know what? They beat GW three times, and that might be all that counts. They return a lot of key pieces from a team that was just absolutely fantastic on the defensive end and an absolute atrocity on the offensive end. Chuba Hams, Jalen Cobb, Kyle Rose, Ty Perry coming off the bench, Ivan Rout, Oni Aisi, and of course the now sophomore big man Joel Soriano, all coming back this year. Kind of a mismatched group, but most of the key pieces from last year's defense are still around.
First thing I want to get into, Jeff Neubauer back for season number 6 at Fordham. You know, I don't want to make light of anything, but I would say he got kind of lucky with the season getting canceled the way it did. I mean, number one, you're not going to fire the A-10 champion, and he did win the last game of the season. That is a straight-up fact. You know, you can't – it is what it is. That's how it happened. But also, like, at that point, I mean, schools were not firing coaches. With a lot of academic institutions struggling financially, it would have been a bad look for Fordham to buy him out and hire a new coach, especially – you know, based on how much people care about that basketball program. But there is going to be some pressure on this year because the Rams did bring in some new athletic leadership. And I don't know. I'm interested to see. I mean, it seems like he's been on the hot seat for a couple years now, and I think the Rams are going to have to play pretty well for him to keep his job.
I believe he's going into a contract year at this point, so it would certainly seem like he's going to have to take a step up to be back next year.
Yeah. But, I mean, you said it. This was actually a surprisingly good defensive team. But offensively, it was just hard to watch. Harder than it would normally be to watch Fordham. I mean, number one, they played one of the slowest tempos in the country. And when you combine that with their complete just lack of anything on offense, I mean, they just held the ball, chucked up bad shots. Even when they could get it inside, their big men, who were great on defense, just couldn't finish in the paint. And, I mean, defense can only do you so much. Like, one thing I think is funny, and I've seen the Fordham Twitter account brag about this on multiple occasions, I'm pretty sure they led the A-10 in scoring defense. And I think that just tells you all you need to know about how that's not a valuable stat at all. Because it's just because they play slow, and also, teams just start running clock at the end of the game because they're already beating them. So, I don't know. It's going to be tough for them to improve on offense, I think, losing two of their top scorers in Antoine Portley and Erton Gazi.
They were 10th in the country in scoring defense and 6th to last in the country in scoring offense.
Oh, my God. Bet the under.
Four of the teams that were worse than them, Fairfield, University of Maryland, Eastern Shore, Kennesaw State and Arkansas Pine Bluff, three historically very bad programs. And then, funny enough, the defending national champions down at Virginia were the other one.
Hey, funny you mentioned that. Fordham beat Maryland Eastern Shore 66-45 in a home tilt at the Rose Hill Gym. I'm sure a lot of people were there to see that fine game.
So we'll go into the questions here.
Yeah, let's do that.
They put up, like you mentioned, 61.7 points a game on defense, good for 10th best in the nation. And yeah, a lot of it was the slow tempo. Well, actually, no, not a lot of it. Part of it was the slow tempo. But, you know, when I watched this team, I felt like I was watching a genuinely good defensive team, at least top four, top five in the conference.
Mm-hmm.
They have a lot of great defensive players, but their offense was completely unwatchable. And so my first question is, if they can turn the offense into just something, I guess okay would be the word to describe it, like 10th, 11th best in the conference, like how good could this team be given that their defense should continue to play at a high level if they can just put the ball in the hoop at just a moderately competent number?
I mean, hypothetically, if Fordham had, you know, I'll give them the 11th best defense in the conference, I think they'd win six or seven games. I think their defense is honestly good enough at that point where they wouldn't finish last place, that's for sure. And they would contend for like the 10th or 11th place finishes in the standings where they might not have to play on Wednesday. My question, though, is how do they get there? Because they lose, really, I think, their two best offensive players. I mean, Antoine Portley was around at Fordham for a while. He was kind of the one key shot creator on the team last year, I thought. And then Ertan Ghazi sort of came out of nowhere to be one of the few decent outside shooters. Well, using those two guys, I don't know. I mean, they were 347th in the country in offense last year. And realistically, it's going to be hard for them to do any worse than that. But just looking at the team, I don't see how they get much better either. So, you know, I think the answer to your question is if they did pass up a couple A-10 teams in offense, that they would win a lot more games. I just don't really see how we get there.
Yeah, and another guy that you didn't even mention, they lost Josh Cologne.
Wait, did they really? Is he gone?
Yeah, we both screwed this up last year because he really came out of nowhere last season, and I think we both thought that he was like a freshman. He was actually a senior the whole time.
Wait, I don't think so. I'll let you keep talking. I'm sorry.
He was either a junior or a senior last year, and he is not listed on their team roster. So,
oh no, my spreadsheet lied to me. You're right. He is not there.
Yeah. So that just takes another layer out of this.
Oh,
I mean, they do bring back another quality ball distributor in Jalen Cobb, who really is the one guy on this team who feels like he has an outside shot of being an all-conference player. It was hit and miss for him last year. I think really his biggest issue is that he had no offensive talent around him. I really think he could get up to maybe 8 assists a game if guys were making shots around him. I see him as a potential like 14-8 guy. So they have that key piece in place, and that really might be the single most important piece to have, but I'm completely with you. I look up and down this roster. I'm not sure who's going to put the ball in the basket off of those Jalen Cobb passes. One guy I do look at, Ty Perry, he's been really just a super hit and miss microwave guy off the bench for 2 years now. He might be the most maddeningly inconsistent player in the entire league, where he has the ability to just not make a three for like a week and a half, but he has shown he's the one guy on this roster capable of going out and getting 20 on a given night.
Gosh, that whole time I was trying to find out what happened to Josh Cologne, but when you're searching for Fordham basketball news, it's just a wasteland. And I mean, all the last news articles were from their win against GW in March. So yeah, that was a surprise to me, and that makes me feel even worse about the Rams. But getting to Jalen Cobb, I mean, yeah, he's definitely going to have to be important to this team. He's really quick. I love him on the defensive end. I mean, I actually, you know, I watched the last game against GW, and he had a lot of steals. He just brought a lot of energy on defense. But offensively, I mean, he's just never been a consistent outside shooter. And he's also never – I don't think he's been the point guard very often either since they had Nick Honor his freshman year. So, I don't know. I'm glad you brought up Ty Perry, just because even though he is inconsistent, he is probably the best shooter on this team now. I mean, he came in at 37% from three, which, I mean, he wasn't taking a ton of them, but I wouldn't be surprised to see him start taking more shots. Otherwise, though, yeah, I mean, at least from the backcourt, there aren't too many scoring threats, really.
So we'll move on to the one guy who could potentially become a scoring threat. And my number two question, how good could Joel Soriano be this year? He really came on strong in conference season, really had some moments where he blew us away. 5.8 points a game, which actually bumped up his season average to 4.8. He didn't do much in the non-con. Can he take a jump on offense and maybe add like some sort of skilled post-up moves? Or is he the kind of guy that's just going to be reliant on being able to get the ball in the dunker spot, which is something that just probably won't happen in the flow of this offense?
I think if there's one reason to be optimistic for Fordham, it is because they're bringing back Joel Soriano, who I think one of my favorite stats of last year is that he finished the year with 5 double-doubles in his last 6 games. And really, I mean, he didn't play a whole lot early in the year, but once he started getting playing time at the end because Fordham's other big men were hurt, he took the opportunity and ran with it. And he came in last year, too, as their most highly touted freshman. So I think he is going to be super important. Defensively, he's already very solid. He led the conference in defensive rebounding rate last year, so I don't have any doubts there. But offensively, he was still pretty bad. He shot 45% from the field, which, you know, as a 6'11 center, that's not going to cut it. And he also, I mean, I'm sure he'll fix this over time, but he turned the ball over a decent amount too.
Yeah, they have a lot of kind of interesting big men on this team between Soriano, Chuba Ohams, who put up 11 a game last year and limited games due to injury, Onye Aisi. And so it's kind of a crowded paint, and I wonder if that could end up having an adverse effect on Soriano's development too. Like, he's going to be competing with some decent players for minutes, and he's going to be competing with them for space in the paint on offense.
See, that's my big question about this team. You could argue that Fordham's three best players, or three of the best players at least, are all bigs. And really, they all kind of shuffled in and out of the lineup because of injuries. At the beginning of last year, Chuba Ohams is kind of where Fordham, they went through him on offense a lot, and he was their highest usage player, but he got injured in the first conference game of the year, and we didn't hear from him again. And then Onye Isi didn't play at the end of the year. I think he might have gotten injured at some point, but he's another good rebounder and shot blocker. I guess one of my questions for this team, do you think playing two of them at the same time could potentially work? I mean, I think it would give them really strong interior defense, but I think it would also kill their spacing way more than it needs to be, because Fordham's already, I mean, they don't have good shooters, so if you make their spacing even worse, that might make their offense struggle even more.
First of all, I should just mention that I'm completely blown away that despite how bad they were shooting the ball last year, that they were getting out rebounded by 4 a game. Like, with how much size and toughness they have, that just shouldn't be happening. And I actually would like to see them just start out with the two big man lineups, try to dominate the boards, try to really suffocate other teams in the paint on defense, because yeah, it'll muck things up on the other side, but I'm not sure they have enough good shooters on this roster to even justify replacing one of these guys with a wing. Like, yeah, having one big guy on the court and keeping the paint open is a great idea until you just can't find enough three-point shooters to make it matter.
Well, yeah, I mean, you look at St. Louis last year, like, I can guarantee the other teams didn't enjoy going up against Hassan French and Jimmy Bell Jr. at the same time. Like, offensively, it makes the outside game a little bit more difficult, but I mean, it feels like with Fordham, if they're going to win games, it's going to be with their defense, and I think that could give them a really strong, I mean, maybe one of the best interior defenses in the conference. But I don't know. It'll be interesting just because we didn't see all three of those players healthy at the same time very often last year. So It's hard to say what Neubauer has up his sleeve.
Yeah, do you have another question? Or was that your second one?
Yeah, I have one more, sort of, I guess. What time do we have?
We still like have a minute and a half.
All right, well, we're going to finish this strong then. I guess one thing I want to talk about with Fordham, I mean, it's, you know, historically they've had some pretty solid freshmen. I don't know too much about their guys this year, but they have two of them, Julian Dozier and Jameer Butler, two guards. Can we expect anything from one of them? Because I feel like that could be another opportunity for Fordham if one of these guys surprises us. Now, I will say, I don't think either of these guys are – it's not like Nick Honor where he had a lot of high major offers and he was pretty highly rated. These guys all had low and mid majors looking at them. So it's hard to say. I mean, I feel like that might be one of the chances where Fordham can see some improvement, though, if one of these new guys surprises us.
Julian Dozier comes from the Putnam Science Academy, a place that has produced some very good A-10 players in just the last couple of years. And, you know, I can't say that I've, like, seen his mixtape or certainly have never gotten to see him play an actual game, but the opportunity is there. These guys are not going to get buried on the bench, and if they have something to contribute to this team, we should know pretty quickly.
Yeah, I would think so. And hey, I mean, Dozier too, he's a point guard. He's 5'9", so I mean, not entirely that much different from Josh Colon. Maybe he could be an undersized but quick point guard and create a spark for this team. And then Jameer Butler too. I mean, I read a little bit on him. It's hard to find that much on Fordham recruiting, but it seems like he's a good 3-point shooter, and that's something Fordham could always use more of.
Yep, and so there is the buzzer. You know, I actually feel like there's more reasons to be optimistic about Fordham this year than there normally is. That defense is just so great that it's going to keep them in a lot of games. And you know what? They may have only beaten GW last year, but I'm still amazed that they didn't win one of those two Duquesne games. I'm still kind of amazed they didn't beat Davidson because they played really well in those three. And, you know, the offense just fell apart at the end. If they can just get somebody to step up and create their own shot, like this might not be a guaranteed pillow fight team.
I wouldn't go that far yet, but I will say that I think that Davidson game you mentioned might have been the worst defensive half of last season. Fordham scored 41 points and they were leading at halftime. But then, I mean, hey, they only scored 21 in the second half. So Davidson held on, but I don't know. I'm not quite as optimistic. I mean, it's hard for me to say too many good things about Fordham. Defensively, I mean, I like him a lot. Offensively, I just don't see where they get that much better, though.
Yeah, and that was the story of last season. So we thank you all for coming back to listen to another episode of the 3-Bid League preseason pod. Be sure to join us again next Monday. We move on to part 4. Rhode Island, VCU, and St. Joe's. We continue along our journey to the beginning of the season. Matt, anything to add before we close this thing out?
I can't believe we just spent that much time talking about Fordham, but honestly, I thought that preview turned out pretty well. And yeah, just excited for the season to start. We have another good one coming up next week too. And there's not that much else going on. The World Series just ended, so there's no baseball, at least for me. That's what I mainly focus on. So go ahead and listen to some A-10 podcasts. There's, other than football, not too much else going on right now. So can get you looking forward to the season, just like us.
Yeah, and you know what? Before we end this, since we're treating the timers like PTI and continuing to go even when the buzzer ends, we just kind of quicken it up. I feel like we need to also acknowledge one of their other staples, which is, we're not going to edit out our errors. We're simply just going to acknowledge them at the end. Josh Colon is not on the Fordham roster. I think both of us expected him to be on there. And, you know, this kind of comes as a surprise.
We're not done with Fordham yet. We have a Jaron English Holmes situation. He is listed as Josh Navarro, number 21. He is there. We're definitely not editing that out, though. Oh my gosh.
What is happening? We're not even, like...
We already went way over on the St. Louis preview last week. The Fordham one might end up being the longest now that we're bringing this up. So he, all right, Josh Navarro, still on the team. That doesn't really change my opinion that much, but you all should know, if anyone's still listening at this point.
I mean, I basically said all I needed to say about this. First of all, someone needs to give us a heads up about these name changes, but
they
have two fantastic ball distributors in Josh Now Navarro and Jalen Cobb. And once again, like just as I said with Cobb, it just makes this even more prominent. If they can find two or three decent shooters on this roster, then they actually have the potential to turn this into an okay offense, because they have the engines and they have the point guards to do it. So I guess then errors for this show. We did not properly set the timing on the buzzer for St. Bonaventure and had to figure that one out on the fly. And we didn't know that Josh Cologne changed his name. So,
I mean, I'm glad he's still there. He's sort of fun to watch as far as forum players go.
Not as perfect of a performance as we typically bring, but you know what? It's fun. We leave this stuff in so that we can remind everyone that we are indeed human. It's fun to give the people a laugh, fun to let them hear our mistakes. And so, you know what? We've talked about this long enough. Thank you all for sticking with us through those mistakes today. If you enjoyed the show, please give us 5 stars on iTunes. Tell a friend. If you have any questions that you want us to answer on the pod, reach out to us on Twitter at 3BidLeaguePod or 3BidLeague@gmail.com. Enjoy the week.